Hi, welcome to the Chaz Palminteri Podcast. The first thing I want to tell you is the one-man show, the original one-man show, A Bronx Tale, started it all back in 1989. I'm doing it again. It's back. The pandemic put us out of business for a year, but we are back. Go to ChazPalminteri.net to buy tickets. You'll see where I'm going to be. Millville, New Jersey is the next step, the Lavoy Theater. That's coming up. Please, check it out. Also, check out my restaurants, 30 West 46th Street in Manhattan, 264 Main Street in White Plains. Great food. Hi, Chaz Palminteri here for the Chaz Palminteri Podcast. I am incredibly excited because my guest here, let me just tell you some of the things he has written. I have to do this because it's so astounding what this man has done. This man is only 16 people, 16, Alan, 16 people on earth have done this. An Oscar, a Grammy, an Emmy, and a Tony. 16 people. That's it. In the history of the world, since mankind has begun. 16 people. And I say that. I'm sorry. I have to... I have to say it.
Okay, no, I appreciate it. Yeah. By the way, don't forget the Razzie for worst song of the year.
You won a Razzie too?
Yeah.
Really? Did?
I won the same project that won. Well, we'll talk about it in the interview. Go ahead. We'll talk about it.
Wait a minute. I mean, let's just, again, I'm going to give him an intro. Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin, Pocahontas, Hunchback of Notre Dame. Is it Dame or Dom?
Dom,
sorry. And obviously, of course, A Bronx Tale. What are some other ones, Alan? Come on.
Well, Sister Act, Tangled. Yeah. Oh, sorry, Sister Act, Tangled, Enchanted, Little Shop of Horrors.
Little Shop of Horrors. I mean, could we go on and on here forever here?
Well.
8 Academy Awards, ladies and gentlemen. No, I have to do this, Alan. 8 Academy Awards, 11 Grammys. 11, yeah, Grammys.
11 Grammys.
Tony Awards. My God, I mean...
Emmy,
Golden Globe.
Razzie.
Oh, forget the Razzie. No. And I say this to you, Alan, but you know what's amazing about you? And I remember when we were writing Bronx Tale, we're all sitting there, Glenn writing the lyrics, you writing the music. Glenn Slater. I remember just your joy and excitement. It's like you never lost your love and excitement. You would jump up and down and play the piano. And what's left for you? I mean, do you still?
First of all, you should take some credit that I was also excited because it's a great project. Because you, my friend, are a great collaborator.
Oh, well, thanks. Thank you.
Okay, now I'm going to make you be humble. Because I'm a major fan of Chaz Palminteri.
Well, thanks.
And I've been long before I met you. So, we would sit in that room and the stories that were just, people don't know, A Bronx Tale just scratches the surface of what you actually have to say about all that period, all the people you've known and all you went through.
Yeah. It was just so great because it's one of those things, collaborations are important because either they work or they don't work. And Glenn Slater, who's just an incredible lyricist, And you and myself, we just worked so well, and whoever had the best idea won.
Yeah,
and Tommy. Let's not forget Tommy Mottola, of course. Tommy Mottola
would come in the room and sit there and kibitz
and talk about what it was like growing up in the '60s, and it was just a beautiful combination. Now, as far as musicals, that happened pretty fast, you would say, right? I mean, from the beginning to the end, when we first started, it took about 3.5 years to get to Broadway.
Yeah. Yeah, that was pretty fast.
That's considered fast.
Yeah. I mean, it varies. Some musicals take 20 years. Some could be done in a year. Little Shop of Horrors was really fast. I mean, Howard and I were very young.
Wow.
Although we had initially done a version of it that wasn't like the show that ended up off-Broadway. Right. It was quirkier. It was like jazzy. It was like the Corman movie. And then we dropped it and then we came back to it. But once you have the idea right, sometimes it can go very fast.
Right. And we have to talk about it because he was such an incredible, talented person was Howard Ashman.
Yeah.
I mean, wow.
Yeah, he was.
And I know when you and him got together, that's when you guys just made magic together.
Yeah, he was the real deal. I think he was maybe the greatest theatrical talent of our generation.
Wow.
And yes, he died, obviously, very prematurely because of AIDS.
Right,
and,
right.
And so many others died of that, of the same, and yeah, also prematurely. But I've actually felt, in a way, I sort of believe in these things. I think he's been a part of all the shows I've done since, from wherever he is.
Wow.
I think Howard had a little piece in writing Bronx Tale.
You know what? I'll tell you something. I remember when I was, you know, putting the book together, you said, here, read this, Howard Ashman. You gave me a little Shop of Horrors. You said, read the book, and you'll feel some structure. And I remember reading it, and I'm getting the chills now thinking about it. I remember reading it saying, oh, my God, there's not a wasted word. Would you look at this? I remember reading it
like
that.
Yeah, I told you also, in the stock and amateur version, you know, we have those little booklets for your Samuel French or MTI. You cannot open to one page without seeing those, you know, the capital letters of lyrics. The lyrics are so threaded through. It was completely integrated, song, scene, very economical and well-paced.
So economical. I remember reading it, and I was just fascinated by it. And I went, oh, I see. Okay, so the real magic happens in the song. The scene is just to get to the song. And I said, look, you gotta have a great book, but the book is just as, the book is important, but the meat sometimes is in the song.
Yeah, I will say Bronx Tale is a little bit of an exception in that there are so many scenes in Bronx Tale that are so known by people, you know, whether it's the, you know, Jane and the car,
or one of the great ones,
or
the fight,
the scene where he's the
crap game,
the blowjob in the car. Sorry,
yes,
which we could never actually say, but the audience, they were like songs. The audience would just be waiting to get to those nuggets of moments. So Bronx Tale was like. Yes, it had. I think I really love the score that we did, but also the scenes and the songs all were like a sequence.
It just was one of those things that just melded together.
Yeah,
the songs and the scenes just. I mean, wow! I mean, I'm just so proud to be in that, and to write the book. And now, of all the things you've written, Billy Joel was just on.
Oh, was
he? Yes, he was. Yes.
And, oh, how is he?
He's great. Wow. He's really great. And I told Michael the story, and I've said this many times. There's only two people I ever met where I sat down with at the piano, and they wrote, and I just looked at them, and I go, "Oh, come on, stop it now." Where you guys could just write.
Well, Billy's amazing.
Hit songs, amazing, you know, just you and him. I mean, I remember when we wrote a song. I was just telling Michael, you did a song. I think it was the one about racism, about the black kid, Willie. And then we said, oh, it's really great, but it doesn't fit. And you just went, oh, all right.
Yeah, he tossed it out.
Yeah, he tossed it out. Remember? He came back an hour later with another great one.
We had our confession song we had?
Confession song was great. Yeah. You just went, yeah, all right, we'll get rid of it.
Get rid of it. Didn't work.
It's amazing.
Getting the end of Act One, you know, Lorenzo's song.
Right.
And that moment, getting that just right, you know, it took it's a lot of work, but when you know what you want to do,
right,
then it's easy. But getting to knowing, that's the hard part.
Yeah, I mean, look, I've written for television, movies, Broadway plays, but to me, a musical is the biggest bear of all. Like, it's like, oh my God. Anything could go wrong at any moment.
Well, what's more collaborative? Because you have star, you have the director, you have the book writer, you have the composer, the lyricist, the set designer, the choreographer, the the lighting designer, right, the sound designer, the props, every aspect is its own star. You know, it's like every aspect, the orchestrations,
right,
the balancing of the band with what's going on stage. It's all of that. And if one element is off, things screw up. Yeah.
I remember talking to Sting, and Sting wrote that his musical,
Last Ship,
which I loved. I loved it. And, you know, went for a while, but then it closed. And I remember him telling me, he says, and Sting has done a lot. He goes, this is the hardest thing I have ever, ever attempted. And it's just, wow.
Well, it's also hard for people who haven't done it before. For those of us, you know, who do a lot, right? Because obviously I write a lot of musicals.
Right.
It's only hard if the structure is wrong, if it isn't the right storyline. Like, you know, we were talking about doing a Bronx Tale, 10 years before we actually did it.
Right.
And I remember saying, I don't know, because I couldn't figure out how would we do it? And I guess the time wasn't right.
Right.
And then second time around, you came back, and I remember Tommy saying, it's Alan, it's the music that came out of all the car radios. It's basically capturing that slice of life.
Right.
And immediately a light bulb went ding.
Right.
Okay. We're taking us into that world. Because for me, every musical should take you into a unique world. You know, where, and you want to, you know, more you want to be in that world, the longer that show will run.
Right.
Because you just go, why? Each one is its own unique place. And so finding that place is essential. And it's hard. It's hard for writers like Sting or like Billy Joel or any number of writers who have their own stamp as a writer,
right,
and it's all about their internal story.
Right.
For them to let go of that and funnel it through characters is a real adjustment.
Yes, and you know, we were blessed because obviously we're talking about the writing team, but we were blessed to have two great directors, Jerry Zaks, 4-time Tony winner, Bob De Niro, who directed the movie.
I know.
So it's like Bob and Jerry, they didn't get in each other's way. Bob was very much into a lot of the technical things about how they looked and the dress and the sound. And Jerry, obviously, is just a master at
musical theater.
You know, and he was always on me, Les Chaz, do this, Les. And the director's like the guy who just puts it all together.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
And we were blessed to have Jerry and Bob. And, just it was a superstar team, a great team, and it just seemed to work out well.
Oh, God, did it ever. And we had
Sergio. Oh, my God.
Well,
Sergio, the choreographer, who obviously, and I remember Tommy saying to Sergio, well, it's not, they can't dance. The wise guys can't be dancers. It's not West Side Story, but they have to dance okay. Yeah. And Sergio just went, yeah.
He knew what to do.
He went, yeah, okay. And you watch them dance, and they dance, and it's a tough guy dance.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
I go, it's great.
Yeah, people, it's the proof is in the pudding with those things. You can't picture it until you see it, and you go, oh, yeah. And then there's Nick.
Oh,
and there's Nick.
Nick Cordero, who passed away from COVID last year.
Yeah.
And 95 days in a coma.
Unbelievable. I told you that after that, at Kennedy Center, he played the dentist in Little Shop.
Yes.
And I went to see him in that. Everything Nick touched, he was great at. The loss of him was so sad. And Bobby,
Bobby Conti. Bobby Conti Thornton, who played, it was the original C on Broadway, Ariana DeBose, who now is in West Side Story, who's a huge star exploding like crazy.
I know.
God bless her. I mean, so talented. You saw that from day one with her, yeah. You know, then playing Donna Summer, then Sky's the Limit, you know, with her. I mean, we just had so much talent. And Christiane,
yeah.
She was in King Kong and
yeah.
God, another, we just had some great, great people.
It was fun.
Richard Blake
yeah.
playing the father, Lorenzo. I mean, we were blessed.
Yeah.
We were blessed.
I do have one question. Is it harder to write music for children or a child demographic?
Glad you asked that question. I don't ever write for children, ever. I write, well, maybe for the child and all of us, but I never just simply write for children because we're all children. Because there's a child inside of all of us. So I write for the character and I write for the purity of the character, and it happens to work for children. Like, I thought...
That's a good question, man. Good
answer. True, though.
Wow.
When we wrote Little Shop of Horrors, I thought, oh, kids can't come to this because it's going to be scary. You know, there's a big plant and it's eating people and it's all this blood. Kids love it. You know, there's nothing, no one more enthusiastic than kids. Oh. And, you know, and one of the stories I tell about talking about, you know, kids' enthusiasm and how it just infuses the world is... when I did the Little Mermaid,
yeah,
I would hear about this little boy who went to school with my niece named Lin-Manuel Miranda. And he was a little kid who was crazy about the Little Mermaid and would bug my niece Jenny about, oh, could your uncle sign this? Or I have a question about this. And he was so wildly enthusiastic. And it's almost like this nutty kid, Lin-Manuel Miranda, I would hear about him all the time. And then one day, he exploded in our culture, taking in all the things he took in, boom, came out. It's that, so when you write things that kids, you know, kids just get it. They absorb it, and then they bring it out with their own filter. It's amazing.
Is that why, and I say this humbly, Alan, that kids love Bronx Tale.
Yeah.
Young kids, 14, 13, 12, 9, 10, love the movie.
Well, first of all, it is a unique view of a fascinating and scary world. Scary to the outside world and yet also just intoxicating in both the power, the passions, the loyalties, all the life lessons that come along with that are huge. And it's authentic, real story. And kids can suss that out.
Well,
you know, when it's phony, they can pick up on that. No question that kids would love it, but look at the audiences that came to see it. It was the broadest audience.
People who never saw a Broadway show.
Yeah.
How many times they said, it's my first Broadway show. And I'm like, wow, welcome to the theater. That's great. And then people who've seen everything came to see it.
Yeah.
Men, women. This men would drag women to the show sometimes. No, they would say, no, we got, and women would drag the men to the show. And it was easy for them to drag them to the show.
Yeah.
It was fascinating.
Yeah, it was fascinating. And you know, it fired off on a lot of levels.
Right.
You know, and every musical has its own sort of demographic, you know, that it appeals to, and it has to find its audience. And there's a unique audience for Bronx. It was a unique audience for Sister Act, the musical.
Was it for Newsies that like that too?
Oh God, yes, because kids grew up with that. And now let me go back to the Razzie Award. The night of the Oscars where I won, I was nominated for 3 Best Song and Score, and I won Song and Score. And I'm going backstage, and there I am with my awards, and someone in the press says, Alan. Yeah, he said, how does it feel to win the Razzie for Worst Song of the Year? I said, what? He said, yeah, for Newsies, High Times, Hard Times from Newsies, the song with Anne Margaret on the Swing.
Yeah.
And of course, I was so, you know.
I mean, what a thing to say at that
time.
No,
I loved it. I loved
see, a guy
it.
Like that, I
no,
want
to.
See,
it.
I slap him.
No.
I slap him right away.
Stop it. Stop it.
I go, come here. Can I talk to you? Bing.
Wrong.
See, that's you're a good Jewish
no,
boy.
No.
He
no.
gets slapped
no,
immediately.
Will you listen to me? No. It's the greatest compliment. They knew I was on top of the world. They gave me the Razzie.
Right.
The worst song. I loved it. I actually now have the Razzie Award. It semi-fell apart when it arrived. But years later, I actually got the Razzie Award. It's like a, looks like a... next time you come to my studio, I'll show you. But anyway, the point is, Razzie Award, worst song of the year. Fast forward 30 years or something. My first Tony for Best Musical? Newsies. Same project.
Wow.
It's amazing. So, everything, it's all about time and place. It's all, you know, timing. And
timing.
People grew up, they grew up loving that movie with all of its flaws and all of its craziness, with Christian Bale playing Jack Kelly. They ate it up, and more and more, it just grew and grew and grew. The same thing happened with Hercules. Hercules was not all that big a hit as it animated. But just before the pandemic, we did it in Central Park.
Right.
You know, that at the Delacorte Theater, and all the papers went crazy. Now we're going to be opening it next summer.
Wow.
So it's like
timing.
It never. Some friend told me this. Who was the friend who said, "Was it no one's that smart"?
No one's that smart. Bob De Niro said
that. No, you said that.
Well, yeah, I gotta be honest. I think Bob said it to me.
Okay, Bob said it to you. Yeah. Well, you said it to me.
Yeah.
But the point is, you just never know.
Right.
You know, you think something's not that big a hit, and then you just wait a decade or two, whatever, and next thing you know, boom.
Did you ever write something, Alan? I don't think you have, that you just said, oh, this is a turkey. This
yes.
is just not going to
yes.
work.
Yes, yes.
And you were wrong. And it was a hit.
That's interesting.
Yeah, because that's the thing, being wrong. Or you said, this is great, and it didn't work.
Well, I did this. Okay, so I did this oratorio with Tim Rice called King David.
Right.
And we opened the New Amsterdam Theater with it. And it was written to be done in the Sultan's Pool in Jerusalem. And it was to commemorate the 3,000th anniversary of King David founding the city of Jerusalem.
That's a heavy...
And it was a rock oratorio.
Right.
And it would have been great there. But there was terrorism. And there was, Rabin got assassinated. It ended up, we couldn't do it in Israel. So Michael Eisner had the idea, we're opening the New Amsterdam Theater. Bring it to New York. Open the New Amsterdam Theater with this oratorio. We opened New Amsterdam Theater with this oratorio. I have never seen a tsunami of horrible reviews like we got for that. It was this very earnest, serious, ambitious 50-piece orchestra, choirs. I remember sitting there watching it, and I was like, oh, isn't this beautiful? And across the aisle from me is a critic, and he's sitting like this. He's got his leg, he's going, and he's, sort of doing that impatient leg. And I went, oh, we're going to get killed. And it was, the reviews were relentless. I mean, it was like, again, a tsunami of hate.
Wow.
And I've been spending the last 20 years still trying to fix it. Tim Rice and I still want to fix that. And I know what was wrong with it. We should have done it, let it just stick to its rock roots. But we did it wrong. It was just, it sent the wrong message. It was,
right.
It was very like, look, aren't we important? Everyone went, no, you're not important. I felt that when I, that opening night, I remember some of the comments. I will say who they were, but one collaborator of mine came up to me and she said to me, oh, I can tell you're just so passionate about this material.
Oh, you're dead. You're dead. When they say that, you're dead.
Another one came up and said, it's a masterpiece. I went, oh, God. And one other said, bumped into me and went, oh, hi, guy, and just walked around me.
Wow.
It was one of those nights.
It was one of those nights. Yeah, you just don't know. I mean, out of all the, it's hard to say. Is there any musical that's one of your favorites that you love, you still love to hear to this day?
Of mine or somebody else's?
No, yours. I mean, Little Mermaid is a great.
Well, as a movie, yes. Yeah. I mean, I love the ones I wrote with Howard, obviously.
Right.
Aladdin turned out really well, and the Aladdin stage musical.
Yes.
And the movie was a miracle, considering that Howard passed away, the story got completely changed. Tim Rice came in to help finish the score, and then it worked.
It worked.
It was, in fact, at the time, the highest grossing animated musical ever.
Wow.
And then Lion King came after it and changed that.
Right. Wow.
Hunchback.
Is Hunchback coming to Broadway?
No. Hunchback it plays all over the world, though, and regional, all over. And it may yet come to Broadway because I think it's so good. But, one thing about Disney is they're going to carefully exercise traffic management with their musicals. So they have Lion King, they have Aladdin. Mm. If Frozen stays, then that's three. That's enough. And then they'll wait. I think Hercules will then follow.
Do you think Broadway's going to be back in September like they said?
Yeah.
You think it will?
Yeah, it's already scheduled. Little Shop of Horrors is reopening. Are you ready for this? They planned the date for the opening of... Now, let me say this. At the top of the movie, if you remember, in the musical, it says, on the 21st day of September, in a decade not too long before our own.
Right.
September 21st, it's opening.
Wow.
Yeah. It's total coincidence. It's opening on September
21st. Is Aladdin coming back?
Aladdin is coming back the 28th.
Wow.
Of September.
And I have a question. How did you even become you? Like, when was the moment you were like, wow, I'm really good at this?
Well, when I was a kid, I felt... I think as I say in Yiddish, in my kishkas, I felt that this is what I love, and so it's all I wanted to do. But of course, like any kid, I thought, songwriter, you can't. That's not a living. You can't. I have to be a dentist like all the other men in my family.
Your dad was a dentist, right?
My dad was a dentist. My father's father was a dentist. My father's brother was a dentist. My mother's sister's husband was a dentist. My father's sister's husband was a dentist. My cousins were dentists.
Wow,
all dentists. And I thought, I guess I have to be a dentist. But thank God I...
But you played, when you were young, you took piano lessons, violin lessons?
Piano lessons, violin lessons. I was very ADD kid, so I would practice, but then I'd get bored and I'd make up my own Beethoven sonata. And the teacher said to my mother, Alan's not learning the pieces. He said, but he's playing for an hour. And I said, well, yeah, I'm faking it, Mom. And the teacher said, I think we should encourage this. But still, it wasn't until I got to college and I said, I do not want to be a pre-med or, pre-dental or whatever. And so to appease my parents, I joined this workshop that was run by this very famous conductor named Lehman Engel. Hmm. And Lehman Engel, I mean, he conducted Porky and Bess. He conducted so many musicals that he studied from the pit of those shows, studied how musicals are constructed. And I learned from him. And
is that when the bell went off? Yeah,
this is the best form. Because I wanted to be Billy Joel. I wanted to be Elton John. I wanted to be Jackson. I wanted to be a singer-songwriter. But Janice and I got together really young.
Right.
And I didn't really want to tour. And so I did theater instead. Now I realize it was so liberating to write musicals because I wasn't simply pulling from, oh, this is, you know, I had this experience or I had that experience. No, I'm dealing with that character and this story. And it just opens up so many doors for me that I never looked back. And I have no regrets about not being a singer-songwriter.
Oh, well, I don't think so. After,
well, especially the way I say it.
After 8 Academy Awards, and I mean that's no, it's astounding the things you have accomplished. I remember when you came in, the cast of A Bronx Tale, the original Broadway cast, I still talk to them, and they said to me, all of them, from one to the next, one of the highlights of my life when we were over your house, Chaz, and Alan Menken got behind your piano and started playing, and they were singing all of your songs.
Yeah, okay.
And for those of you, to be with a bunch of Broadway singers singing his songs was pretty astounding. They say it ranks in one of the highlights of every one of their lives.
It was great. It was great. I loved doing that, and it was so sweet with all of them crowding around, and it meant the world to me too. It was a lot of fun.
You do concerts too on your own, right, Alan?
Well, yeah, I want to get back to them. It has the very unoriginal name of A Whole New World of Alan Menken. That was Richard Kraft, my manager, came up with that name. But it's actually okay.
A Whole New World of Alan. I like it.
Yeah. But we have three screens, so you actually have some videos and some pictures and things. And as I'm playing, right, I'm talking and referring to it, and I basically walk the audience through my catalog and talk to them about
the song and
the songs and the stories behind the songs. And
I remember when we were sitting down going over One of the Great Ones, and I remember that, and I remember, and it's, you're so, you wrote, well, I said to you, I said, yeah, I said, well, my Sonny asked my mother out, and my mother said no, and you went, what? And you were like, no, we got to put something in about Sonny and Rosina. And I said, no, but they didn't do anything, Alan. You go, no, we got, and you wrote the end of One of the Great Ones where, about, trust me, you and Glenn wrote, and I said, and I remember saying it, I said, I don't know, Alan. I said, it's such a gorgeous song, and then at the end, it's a little bit of a downer. And I said, I don't know if that's going to work. And boy, was I wrong. And when I saw it, I went,
well, we know these things.
I said, son of a bitch.
See, that's why on the next musical we do together, you'll know more.
I'll know more. No, I learned so much. And I remember seeing that. I went, wow, son of a gun was right. I said, look at that. And so many people, that one moment, if I tell you how many people have commented about that, what they said, yeah, because Sonny's dream was maybe to marry Rosina or a girl like Rosina.
Yeah.
And trust me, I know. And it just, the depth of that one little thing at the end, what do you call that, a refrain or something?
A reprise.
I went, wow. And then when I remember when I got to sing it on stage, it was, wow.
Oh, you were, oh, it was so good.
It was so great. It was so great to do it. Then when I did it as an actor, I felt it. And I was like, wow. I said, wow, I was right.
Yeah.
It was like...
I still remember, you know, going to the Long Acre Theater. You go down that alleyway and
right
down into the, you know, the backstage, and just coming through. And if at the Long Acre, the there's no pit, so the orchestra was actually in
different rooms,
open dressing rooms areas, and it was amazing. They sounded fantastic. But it was just that feeling of almost family as you went through that.
It really was.
That backstage and then into the theater.
And all of, and so many people would just, all the they're still together, a lot of them still called me, and, oh, I've done 100, I did all these musicals, but still Bronx Tale is my favorite, the family atmosphere. And
it's really special.
And the great Nick Cordero, and he was like Richard Blake, and Lucia. Lucia Giannotti.
Yeah, Lucia just worked on Hercules with us.
Lucia just worked. That's right. And Lucia was so brilliant as my mom, and it was just I don't know. I always go, does this happen all the time? And People who really been wrote a lot of music will say, no, it doesn't.
No,
Sometimes it's a disaster.
Or and sometimes they just fall by the wayside.
Right.
You know, I have a trunk full of projects that I would love to try to develop for the stage, but, you know, life's too short. I got too many new things, other things I'm doing.
Right.
But I still have projects. There was a Damon Runyon project I wanted to do with Howard before he died. And I still have that sitting there wanting to do that story. It was
Damon Runyon, really?
It was a movie called Big Street. And it starred Henry Fonda and Lucille Ball and Henry Fonda. And it was a Damon Runyon short story called Little Pinks. And he's this busboy, and he's just like this little, you know, like someone from under, you find under a rock.
Right.
And this beautiful showgirl, but she's very kind of full of herself. And she gets overly full of herself, gets smacked and knocked down a flight of stairs by this gangster, and she's crippled. And the only person who stands by her is this little busboy, and he ends up pushing her wheelchair all the way to Florida. Very romantic, very quirky, very Runyon, and dark. But there's every, you know, there's in every story, there's a potential musical if you have a character that has this dream and some sort of a journey they have to go through to fulfill that dream. The question is there a world that people are going to want to go to?
To see, yes.
To watch that musical, and is it going to really speak to them? And you see, it's...
Has anybody ever written a book on it? Was there ever a book? I mean...
I did that musical twice. It didn't work. I'm trying again. But it's not on the front burner.
I do have one more question. Speaking of disasters, I love Broadway, but I've always thought, like, what is the worst night that's ever happened in this theater? Has an actor gotten sick in the middle of a performance or just disappeared?
Oh, my God.
I'll tell you
the worst. I wasn't there for this. It's a horrible story. When Little Mermaid played at the... Lunfontein Theater, the dressing rooms go way up, and actors would take their places. They have to walk across this catwalk and get into position, and they'd come down in some sort of a pulley system, whatever.
Oh, God.
Yeah, and an actor, there was somebody didn't put something in place, and he fell from a great height onto the stage. They thought. And he lived, but he's in terrible physical shape. Someone thought a gun had gone off, and it was his body actually hitting the stage. Okay, I wish to find ones that are funnier.
Oh, yeah, a little funnier.
Oh, okay, here's a story.
Yes,
but this isn't from one of my shows. It's the only one I heard about. This is Zero Mostel, when he was doing Fiddler on the Roof.
Yes.
First of all, he legendarily would love to take meals where he would eat tons of garlic and onions and then sing into people's faces and just sort of watch them as they, do I love you? Do I what? But Austin Pendleton, you know Austin,
yes.
Right, tells the story of one night he was Muttle the tailor, and he was telling, Austin should tell the story because right. It's hilarious. He was telling Tevye that he wants to marry his daughter. And Tevye always has the reaction like, you know, what? And this night, Austin said, as Muttle said, I want to marry your daughter. And Zero just stood there. And stood there. And Austin said, oh, I'm in deep trouble here. And slowly, Zero just went forward and fell on top of him. Did basically a take, fell on top of him. The audience was laughing like crazy, and Zero was heavy, and Austin couldn't breathe. And I was like,
so Zero did it on purpose.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, he was crazy.
But also amazing. I mean, Zero Mostel, you know, in Fiddler on the Roof was incredible.
Jerry Sachs used to tell me, he's told Jerry once, they're laughing, don't talk. Let them laugh, let them finish. Don't talk, don't talk. Stand, don't move, don't talk.
Yes.
Jerry told me that, yes.
Oh, Jerry has so many great... You know, and what's interesting about Jerry, He's such a great director for comedy.
Great,
why?
Great director.
Because he's a great audience for comedy.
Yes, he laughs, and he knows how to make something funny.
Because he just loves it, and that's the key to it.
Yeah, you know what's funny? Because when I was doing, when I brought back to Broadway my one-man show, I wanted Jerry to direct it, and obviously he said yes. And but I showed him the tape of it, and he looked at me when I, if I'll never forget it, I showed, I said, this was the tape when I did it in 1989, 1990, I showed it to him, and he goes, he looked at it, he calls me, and says, well, there's nothing that you can do to it. It's perfect. He goes, but I could make it funnier. And I was like, wow, that's something to say, right? I said, okay. And then we did it, and he just made me slow things up and say, wait, just wait, wait. And I slowed things up, and you know what? It was the best I ever did it, and it was funnier.
Yeah.
He was right. He goes, trust me, they'll laugh here. So I slowed up, you know, like a lot of the looks on the blowjob thing with the boy and, you know, the hand and all that. He goes, slow up, wait. And I waited, and I just stood there looking at him like, did you just say that, you know, as the character? And people just laughed.
Yeah, yeah. Jerry also, he directed, well, he directed the a Little Shop Revival of mine. He directed Sister Act.
Sister Act was great.
And did a great job. And of course, Bronx Tale. And, yeah. It
was wow. And it's hard to direct comedy. You really got to know what the hell you're doing.
Oh, yeah.
Comedy, like they said, dying is hard, comedy is easy. Edmund Kean said that, a great English actor. When he was dying on, supposedly this is the story, he was on his deadbed and they said, well, how do you feel about, I know you're dying, are you going to be, he says, dying is hard. No, he goes, dying is easy, comedy is hard.
Yeah.
And he died.
Yeah. I love that.
And he died.
It's true. It's true. You know, the comedy songs are very hard. You know, a comedy song, you have to, the situation has to be funny in and of itself in order for a comedy song to really work.
Right.
And you can't force it. So, like, for instance, you know, when in Beauty and the Beast, when you have basically this bar full of these, you know, these dimwits singing a song of praise to this essentially Neanderthal, Gaston, and there were things they admire about him or that he admires about himself, you know.
Right.
Every last inch of me's covered with hair, or I use antlers in all of my decorating. I remember when Howard put that lyric in front of me. Howard was very, because Howard could beat up his those characters that he got the comedy out of.
Right.
He would just beat them
up. Would you guys
up.
Write the lyrics first or the music first? Or was sometimes different?
It varied each time.
It varies each time with you.
It varies. It varies. Yeah. It was a little bit of both.
Wow.
It depends on, you know, it's on a case-by-case basis.
Really? Because I was talking to Billy Joel, and Billy said he always writes the music first, and then he's got to kind of like squash in the lyrics to see, and he's such a great lyricist.
Oh,
but
he's such a great lyricist.
Yeah, so it's just amazing how people write. Alan, your advice to any young songwriters out there, singer-songwriters. I know it's hard.
No, I'll tell you. I'm
sure, what would you say to them?
First of all, if you love songwriting, do it all the time. Let's put it this way. Whatever you do with your life should be the thing that you want to do every day. If you know, the thing that you say, I'm supposed to do this, but I really want to do this, you know, and you think you're like sneaking off to do the thing right. You're not supposed to do. That's the thing you're supposed to do, first of all.
Right.
And the more you do it, the better you'll get at it. And you just do it and do it and do it. Never fall in love with your own work. Never. Always be ready to throw it out and do something else. Throw it out, do something else.
Right.
Throw it out and do something else. Because it will always, and you can always retrieve that, you know, the thing you threw out. Generally, it always gets better the more you do it. So don't ever get full of yourself. You're writing, especially if you're writing for musical theater.
Yes.
It's not about you. it is not about you. It's about the characters, and it's about the story. And you serve them, serve something bigger than yourself, and you'll benefit for yourself more than if you decide you're the important thing.
Wow.
The assignment is bigger than the person who's filling it.
Wow. Well, that's a great way to end this interview. I mean, Alan Menken, I don't know what to say. You are, not only are you a great man, a good person.
Oh, please.
No, you are. But what is left? I mean, I don't know. What, you know, people go, oh, I want to win Academy Award. Yeah, you won 8 of them. You know, yeah, I want to win a Golden Globe. Yeah, you won 11 of them. I mean, what's left? I mean, you just, but the thing that I love about you is your passion and your enthusiasm. It was like, when I remember when you were writing Bronx Tale, you standing up at the piano playing, singing, and dancing, and I was like, man, would you look at this guy? I just
I
never
don't dance very well.
No, no, but I just never forgot that, and I was like, wow. And I want to say thank you for writing A Bronx Tale. I want to thank Glenn Slater, too, obviously.
You know what? Sometime in the future, let's do this again and have Glenn here.
And have Glenn. I want to do you and Glenn together.
Okay.
Absolutely.
And before we go, just one question. Do you ever get sick of getting awards?
No. I don't know anybody that does that.
No.
No.
No. The hardest part of the awards is getting up and giving that speech.
Speech, right.
Oh, God. Oh, God. It's especially, well, the Oscars, I don't know if they'll ever be the same again, but
yes,
the way
true.
They were, when you stand up in front of that audience and you know that everyone is there, I mean, you know, the ego level in that room is electric.
Yeah.
And you just feel like you got to make it fast. Just say it and get off the stage. But everyone who you worked with, they would like to be acknowledged. Nobody wants to see you know, look at a page and just read off names.
Right.
And yet, if you forget one name, that person's going to never forgive you. So it's like, oh, God. So you go, yay, I won. Oh, yeah, I won. Oh, I got to go up there now.
I got to give a speech.
But it's I can't complain.
You can't complain. I mean, and I personally want to thank all the people from Bronx Tale, Alan, the music, Glenn Slater, the lyrics, Bob De Niro and Jerry Zaks directing,
Sergio,
an incredible choreographer who's won a Tony since then.
And our set designer,
Beowulf. Beowulf, yeah.
Yeah.
Incredible set designer. I mean, we had a team of people and the cast, Nick Cordero, Richard Blake, Lucia Glagnati, Andreana DeBose, Christiani. What's Christiani's last name? I forgot. I went blank. I'm sorry, but you know she's a huge star, Christiani. She was in
Michael King. David.
Michael David and Lauren.
And
Lauren Mitchell.
Tommy Mottola.
And Tommy Mottola, who was really the guy, and I have to say this. People say, how did that happen? And I go, you know, I always say, Bob De Niro put the movie on his back and made it happen. Tommy Mottola put the play on his back, put money in his own pocket, and made it happen. So I want to say thank you to all of them. And God bless you all. And this is the Chaz Palminteri podcast signing off. Don't forget, if you like it, hit the like button, subscribe to my channel. I'll be back every Monday with a new episode. And the great Alan Menken, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I subscribe, by the way.
Thank you. Hi, welcome to the Chaz Palminteri Podcast. The first thing I want to tell you is the one-man show, the original one-man show, A Bronx Tale, started it all back in 1989. I'm doing it again. It's back. The pandemic put us out of business for a year, but we are back. Go to chazpalminteri.net to buy tickets. You'll see where I'm going to be. Millville, New Jersey is the next step, the Lavoy Theater. That's coming up. Please, check it out. Also, check out my restaurants, 30 West 46th Street in Manhattan, 264 Main Street in White Plains. Great food.